There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live on... There's a goal. There's been a goal. Guess what?
It certainly has. Yes, there has, Tom. 1-1. Fulham has found their equaliser, and it is that man that has been dominating the headlines for Fulham all season long so far. Alexander Mitrovic getting on the end of a Luciano Vietto cross and flicking a finish beyond Ben Foster for the equaliser. It had been coming. Fulham were pressing with urgency as we go deep into this second half, and on the 78th minute they got their reward, and they now, Tom, look like the likelier of the two teams to actually go ahead and find a winner. It's all Fulham at the moment, deep in the Watford territory, on the edge of the Watford penalty box, and concerning times for Watford as Fulham press for a winner.
Deportivo Alaves were the victors a little earlier on. That one's come to a conclusion. They were convincing victors against Rayo Vallecano. Goals from Navarro, Gomez, Caleri and Burgoy, seeing them win 5-5 to Rayo Vallecano's 1, that from the boot of Raul de Tomas. So good victory there for Alaves, and there is an early kickoff as well over in Italy, so we'll keep an eye on that one for you. No goals as yet in that one, but we will keep you posted as and when the goals go in. And then from 6 o'clock this evening, we turn our attention to the United Kingdom, where Manchester United will be taking on Wolves. That's the feature, our feature game, courtesy of our friends and colleagues at TalkSport, who are going to be us uninterrupted commentary of that one. And of course, goals from all the 6 o'clock kickoff, six games kicking off at 6 o'clock. So a lot to look forward to, Robbie.
Certainly is, and I think we can be joined now live on the line from Old Trafford. Manchester United facing Wolverhampton Wanderers, looking to avoid back-to-back defeats in the Premier League at home for the first time in Jose Mourinho's managerial career. And we can cross now to our colleague over at TalkSport, Adam Bridge, who will be bringing you the action in all its effervescent glory from 6 p.m. local time. Adam, a very good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, guys.
Adam, what can you tell us about this one? It's got the stamp of George Mendes written all over it, this fixture. Manchester United taking on Wolverhampton Wanderers. And for Jose Mourinho, the renaissance of Manchester United season, it's an opportune moment to keep that going and keep the momentum going.
It is. I think it's going to be that simple, really. It's a Portuguese affair all round, isn't it, when you can sit at... That Mourinho, of course, has those close relationships as well, and you look at what he's done at Wolves in terms of the players, but also the fact that the manager, Nuno Espirito Santos, was the first player that he ever signed. So it does have his mark all over it, and I think it promises to be an intriguing encounter this afternoon, if I'm honest. You look at how Manchester United, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, I thought they would kind of find their feet and just start to find a way of playing and winning games. And those two back-to-back victories in the Premier League obviously have helped build some confidence. They look a lot more solid. He looks like he seems to have settled on a team that at this moment in time he feels quite comfortable with. And also the victory in midweek as well, again, just giving that little bit of extra confidence. But there is that little added bonus to this game. The fact that Nuno obviously played for Mourinho at Porto in those golden years, won 5 trophies under him as well, and the fact that Wolves, as a newly promoted side, look like possibly the most best equipped we've seen for a long, long time. You know, they've bought players, they've bought high quality, they have a very good coach, they have a fantastic infrastructure at the club now, and with two victories on the bounce for them, this promises to be a difficult afternoon for Mourinho and Manchester United.
Certainly does, Adam, and looking at the table, 8th versus 9th in the table, and Wolves 8 points after 5 games. As you mentioned, I think the game against Manchester City showed everyone that they were here to play football, and Nuno Espirito Santo said, we only really know how to play one way, we're not going to cater to anyone. In many ways, it could be Wolves playing a bit more of the football in this one. I don't know what you can tell us about the team news, but Jose Mourinho's Manchester United have not been a team that has dazzled in terms of its football this season. Can we expect the possession to be more in the hands of Manchester United? How do you see the game going, and what team news can you share with us?
I have a funny feeling that we'll see United soaking up the pressure and playing on the counter, if I'm going to be honest with you. I think the way Wolves keep the ball is very solid and very strong, and they like to pass the ball around. They do have really, really good possession, and I think United will have to play the soaking up. And actually, you look at the teams they picked today, and that really would indicate that. So for United, obviously he's without Matic today because he's suspended. Also absent still is Rashford, So it's a 4-3-3 today. Shaw comes back in, as does Valencia, with Smalling and Lindelof continuing as the two centre-halves. Then at the three in midfield are going to be Fellaini and Pogba, and also alongside them today is Fred. So that's the three that are going to sit in central midfield, with then Lukaku down the centre with Lingard and Sanchez on the other side. So, you know, it looks like he's come and he's set up, so they will soak up the pressure and they will obviously try and hit them on the counter, which is a bit random for a Manchester United side playing at home. Team new to Wolves is really simple, unchanged for a six straight game, includes the bench as well. So I think it will be a game where Wolves will get plenty of the ball. Last time they went there they lost 5-0. As I say, they haven't won there since, I think it's 1980 the last time they were victorious at Old Trafford. So it's a big ask for them, but as teams go, they are set up to try and deliver.
Some great pictures that we saw a little bit earlier on from Old Trafford. Great to see that Sir Alex Ferguson is at the game and he will be in attendance. Your thoughts on that? A sign that his full recovery is nearing its the fullness of point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when we first heard the awful news last season, I think everyone really did fear the worst at the time. But just to see those images of him arriving at the stadium today, and we understand fans have been told to be in their seats for, 2:15 our time, so any time now. So I feel they probably are going to mark his return to Old Trafford to watch Manchester United this afternoon. And, you know, there's no doubt about it. He, at some point, I know he wasn't particularly keen on Mourinho being the first person to follow him, but I think he realised after what happened with Moyes and Van Gaal that actually Mourinho was the right person, and it will be interesting to see how much of an influence he will have now he is getting back to full health on Mourinho and how the football club in total is run. But I think, you know, there's just going to be 70 odd thousand people who are absolutely relieved to see him in that stadium today.
Yeah, great to see those pictures, Adam, and we wish him all the best. We'll let you go, but a quick prediction if we can from you for this game. Manchester United, of course, successful in the Champions League against Young Boys midweek, winning against Watford, winning against Burnley as well, but Wolves, as you mentioned, coming off the back of a nice run as well. How do you see this one going?
I think it'll be a draw today, actually. I don't think it's going to be a comfortable afternoon for United. I thought they'd struggle a little bit last week against Watford, to be fair, but I think he had his tactics right. I think he finds it harder to get those tactics right when he's at home. So I'm going to go for a scoring draw today.
Bridgie, just one final one from one West Ham fan to another West Ham fan. Did you sleep a little better last Sunday?
I slept better, not just because of the result, actually. Tom, to be honest with you, I slept better because of the quality of the performance. I think that was what got me, actually. We were by far the better team. We were dominant. We were hungry. To see Rice playing as well as he did was excellent. And Yarmolenko and the link-up with the other two front boys looked pretty good for me. So I'm hopeful, but then it is Chelsea tomorrow and Manchester United next weekend, so let's not get carried away.
We won't indeed. Enjoy the game this afternoon. Thanks very much indeed for your time this afternoon. Adam Bridge.
Cheers, buddy.
A big thanks to Bridget for being there with us and bringing us all the latest. He will, of course, be calling the game for you from 6 o'clock. And any goals that go in after 6, you'll be able to hear right here on Dubai I-103.8. Stay tuned straight after that one. You've got Brighton against Spurs coming up at 8:30 as well. There's a small matter of a world heavyweight fight coming up a little later on as well. We will talk more about that. And, of course, the rest of the football and the other sporting stories coming your way just after this.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Leicester play Huddersfield at 6 o'clock and the Leicester manager Claude Puel has made three changes to the side that were beaten at Bournemouth last week. Johnny Evans replaces the suspended Wes Morgan at the heart of the defence, while Daniel Amati starts ahead of Ricardo Pereiro. Kelechi Iheanacho is also preferred to Demiraye Gray for Leicester this afternoon. David Wagner makes two changes to his Huddersfield side that fell to defeat against Crystal Palace last weekend. Florian Hajdukjanic and Stevie Mooney both dropped the bench for this game. Eric Durm makes his debut. Laurent Depoitre leads the line at the King Power. That one's kicking off at 6 o'clock.
Leicester against Huddersfield. Bring you the team news as and when we get it. Robbie G?
Just got some more coming filtering in through at the moment, Tom, coming out of the Cardiff game. Cardiff taking on Manchester City, and the big news from a Manchester City point of view is David Silva, goal scorer last week, has been dropped to the bench. I'm not sure whether that is just a rotational policy from Pep Guardiola, whether he's suffering a slight knock. We'll try and get more details on that. But the team as it stands, Ederson, Carl Walker, Otamendi, Laporte and Delph, that is effectively unchanged. Although Benjamin Mendy, of course, with that knee injury, is not a feature today. Ilkay Gundogan, Fernandinho and Bernardo Silva will be taking up the midfield, with Leroy Sané, Sergio Aguero and Raheem Sterling playing in the forward roles for Manchester City.
Burnley take on Bournemouth. Also another 6 o'clock kickoff here in the UAE. Sean Dyche responding to that last defeat for Burnley at Wolves last Sunday by bringing in Matty Loughton, Ashley Westwood and Matej Vidra for Bardsley, Hendrick and Barnes respectively. Cherries though, they've just won, change to the side that beat Leicester 4-2 last week. Captain Andrew Sermon in for Dan Gosling. So team news coming through for you on that one. I've also got a bit of news for you with regards to Palace. They take on Newcastle at 6 this evening. Roy Hodgson named the same 11 that started in last week's 1-0 win at Huddersfield. Jordan Ayew continues to deputise for the injured Christian Benteke in attack. Newcastle midfielder Jonjo Shelvey makes his first start since returning from a thigh injury. Last played back in August. The former Swansea man replaces Isaac Hayden. Skipper Yamal Lascelles has shaken off an ankle injury to take his place in the back line. Kennedy comes in for midfielder Jacob Murphy. And Solomon Rondon replaces Joselu in attack as well.
Full-time whistle at Craven Cottage. It is Fulham 1, Watford 1. It remains a draw and honours even for those two sides. Fulham look like they might nick it at the end. Alexander Mitrovic, the goal scorer, the man who got the equaliser for Fulham, saw a header ricochet off the crossbar, but it was not to be for that late spell of pressure. Andre Gray opening the scoring on the second minute. Fulham finally getting back into the game through Mitrovic on the 78th minute. It's 1-1, a point apiece, and neither side can be all that delighted with that.
0-0, 20 minutes in. Serie A early kickoff. Parma taking on Cagliari in that one for you. Fiorentina take on Spal later, and then Sampdoria at home to Inter is the late kickoff. 10:30 kickoff that one. So plenty of football to look forward to, but lest we not forget, it's not just all about the football. There's golf going on as well. We haven't done leaderboards yet, have we?
We've not, and I want to talk quickly if I can about a record that fell on the European Tour not so long ago. Yesterday, Ollie Fisher from England went into the history books. You're all nodding at me. You've all heard this story. He has become the first player on the European Tour ever to shoot a 59. A quite incredible score, and it's been done quite a few times on the PGA Tour. They've had a few 58s on the PGA Tour. He's having day after 59 syndrome today because he's level par. He's level par for his round. But he went out in 28, the Englishman, five birdies and an eagle, then made three straight birdies at the turn, 10th and the 11th and the 12th, to get his round really into the shape where he could feasibly break 60, sorry, and it is a par 71, so that round was a round of 12 under par, I should say. He birdied 15, he birdied 17 as well, and he missed a putt on 18, a 40 footer that could have led to a 58. Let's hear now from Ollie Fisher.
Can't really describe it at the moment. I think you know, out there on the course with my caddy, it was just a matter of keep going and trying to enjoy it. So, you know, obviously knew I was in with a shout of shooting a low one, having a good start, and then making a couple of birdies there around the turn on 10, 11 and 12. And obviously 15 is a short par 4 and 17 is well reachable if you get your drives away. So, you know, it was important for me to kind of keep reminding myself that I was out there to have some fun and enjoy it and not get too tentative, which it's, you know, myself anyway, but kind of when you got a good round going, it's easy to do that as a pro. So, you know, I was really proud of myself the way that I hit a couple of good drives on 17 and 18 under those circumstances, and, you know, obviously hold a great putt on 16 for par, which I think just kind of kept the momentum going.
How different is the pressure? You've won on the European Tour. How different is the pressure trying to shoot 59?
I don't know. I mean, I was pretty nervous on that little one on the last there. I mean, it was awkward because I had 130 yards to the flag on 18 there, and it's kind of, I hit my gap wedge 125, and the wind was just kind of starting to kick up a little bit at that point, and I just felt like I didn't want to risk hitting it a little shy, pitching it a couple on that front edge there, and you know, you can get the odd soft bounce out here, so you know, I went with a little pitching wedge. You know, I don't think it pitched that far past the flag, but it got a bit of a kick on and left me a bit of an awkward one. So you know, I was just delighted to give myself a foot in the end. It was I thought it was going a little bit too pacey halfway down, but you know, I had a great chance of 58 in the end. But you know, just really pleased with the day. You know, pleased to, you know, going out starting the day, my intentions were to try and obviously make the cut and post a good score and, you know, see where we're lying coming into to Saturday. But you know, it's great to go out this morning and shoot around like that.
So well played, Ollie Fisher. And looking at the leaderboard now, it's amazing what can happen in golf. He's struggling today and he's down in a tie for fifth. So despite shooting 12 under par yesterday, he is he's still finding nine players above him, or at least tied with him on the leaderboard. Lucas Herbert is the man in front. He's on 17 under par. This is the Portugal Masters. He's two clear of Tom Lewis and Eddie Pepperell as well. Ollie Fisher in that tie for fifth at 12 under par alongside Jordan Smith and Mikko Korhonen. So that's the final European Tour event before the Ryder Cup. Over on the PGA Tour, it is the crescendo and the finale to the FedEx Cup playoff. So on Sunday night, one golfer is going to bank themselves a cheeky payday of $10 million. That is the prize for winning the FedEx Cup. And right now, Justin Rose is in pole position to do that. What an amazing couple of weeks it's been for the Englishman. Getting to world number one, finishing runner-up to Keegan Bradley in the BMW Championship, and now getting to the top of the leaderboard. And what a leaderboard this is at Eastlake for the Tour Championship. This is the stuff of sponsors' dreams here over at Eastlake, because Justin Rose and Tiger Woods are tied for the lead at 7 under par. Woods still trying to win for the first time since 2013. What a story that would be if he could go on and do that. Rory McIlroy on his own in third on 5 under par. Billy Horschel, Patrick Cantlay, and John Rahm, the DP World Tour Championship winner, one of the best players in Europe at the moment, is in a tie for fourth at 4 under par. Let's hear from a few of those main contenders now. We'll start with Justin Rose, tied for the lead, and he's bagged himself a tee-off time with Tiger Woods for tonight.
You know, obviously playing with him versus playing in front of him today, I think it was just big crowds no matter what. Obviously, people are excited about watching Tiger play again. He's obviously right on form and feeling very comfortable out there. Looks like he's driving it well. Irons are great all year. Looks comfortable with the blade. So, you know, it's exciting for people to kind of get a look at him back at his best, and it'll be fun to play with him. I played with him earlier this year in Bay Hill and enjoyed playing with him there. But yeah, there's more on my mind than just playing with Tiger tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, Tiger Woods, rounds of 65 and 68 to grab that share of the lead at Eastlake. And he's been knocking on the door for so long this season. He should have won, perhaps could have won, the PGA Championship. He was contending at the Open Championship as well. He's knocked on the door in a few PGA Tour events, and this would be an incredibly prestigious one for him to get if he, in this short field, there's only 30 players made it to Eastlake. Let's hear now the thoughts of Tiger Woods, who wasn't overly happy with that second round of 68.
I didn't hit very good overall today. I didn't quite have the sharpness that I had yesterday, and it was pretty evident. You know, I missed the ball in every spot that I needed to. So I always had a good angle in there. So that helps, and my short game's been good. No, I've been pretty good. I've won 14 majors, and so pretty good at being patient. Yes, but in order to get ahead, I had to have been patient.
How do you feel your body?
How do I feel? Health-wise? Yeah, I feel good. I feel strong, and, you know, this heat has been, it's been one of those summers where it seems like every event we played in, it's been like 100 degrees, and you know, for the most part, it's the only thing I've really struggled with is maintaining my weight and keeping my weight up. And that's always been a struggle when it gets hot like this.
Tiger Woods keeping excitement levels to an absolute minimum in his press conference. Doesn't want to get too carried away. He's had to field a lot of questions, Arch, about when he's going to win again. He's probably getting sick and tired of them, to be honest. He just needs to get over the line.
Well, he's got as good a chance as any, particularly in a short, truncated field like the Tour Championship. Two interesting storylines for me out of those two stories from the European Tour and the PGA Tour this week. Firstly, Oliver Fisher. A year ago, he was playing the same event to earn enough money to keep his card on the European Tour.
Yeah.
And then we talk about the Justin Rose story. In the last week or so, he's become the world number one. Here's a man that 20 years ago missed 17 consecutive cuts as a professional when he turned from that performance, I think, at Birkdale, when he turned for as a 17-year-old. It just shows you that, and he's about to win maybe $10 million as well as a bonus.
Yeah.
Just shows you the perseverance and the fine line sometimes in sport between success and failure. Those two stories there about Justin Rose and Oliver Fisher to a degree.
No, completely. An amazing perseverance from Justin Rose to get to the mountaintop and to get to the top of the world rankings after the start he had to his career. And he's not won an awful lot, but he's just been consistent this year, and he's been finishing in the top echelons of some of the biggest events in world golf, and the rankings don't lie at the end of the day. And then you look at the fickle nature of the game and the two hot players coming in, Bryson DeChambeau, who won those back-to-back FedEx events, and Brooks Koepka, who's won two majors this year. They're propping up the field at Eastlake. Bryson's at 6 over par, Brooks Koepka's at 7 over par, and it's amazing, the fickle nature of form, particularly in golf. You got it one week, you don't have it the next, and it is amazing, even with these best players in the world, how things can change so quickly. So when you see someone like Rose put in a performance, a run of performances like that, that is not to be underestimated in any way, shape or form. But yeah, let's get to another man in contention at Eastlake, Rory McIlroy, another player, incidentally. He won the Arnold Palmer Invitational, but he's not been at the best of his form and his abilities in 2018. He feels, though, that his game is getting closer.
Still give myself plenty of chances. You know, if I'm disappointed about anything, it's probably the two pars on the par fives. You know, I had a 6-iron and a 4-iron into them, and I made 2 fives. So, you know, if I can make 2 fours there, and, you know, I'm all of a sudden 7 under instead of 5 under and probably in the last group. But, you know, look, there's still 36 holes to play. And I like this golf course. You know, I've played it, I don't know, it was the fourth or fifth time at the Tour Championship. And, you know, I've played it pretty well every time I've came here. So, you know, I think it suits me, it suits the ball striker, and feel like my game has continuously gotten a little bit better over the last few weeks, and, you know, I feel in a good place with it.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, game on indeed. We've had one result from the Premier League a little earlier on, draw, honours even between Fulham and Watford. We're getting ready for Man United against Wolves. That's coming your way in just a few moments' time. I've just got some team news for you from Liverpool. This is bizarre, this Liverpool team news. Well, not so much Liverpool team news, but their opponents today, Southampton. I think they might be going just a little bit defensive. Let's start with Liverpool, shall we? Roberto Firmino, fully recovered from his eye problem, returns up front for Liverpool. Zeredan Shaqiri gets his first start in midfield with Danny Sturridge and James Milner dropping to the bench. Joel Matip is in defence in place of Joe Gomez. So Liverpool are Alisson Van Dijk, Matip, Alexander-Arnold, Robertson, Henderson, Wijnaldum, Shaqiri in that holding role in midfield, and then the big three, Mane, Firmino and Salah up front. Goals are plenty, goal threats are plenty as well, and it looks like I think that Mark Hughes might have taken note of that. Southampton make two changes from the side that drew with Brighton last time out. Oriol Romeu and Matt Target are in for Elianoussi and Danny Ings. Danny Ings can't play because he has been lent. He's there from Liverpool, which just basically means that Liverpool are going in, Southampton are going in with a 5-3-1-1 formation, with a striker up front who hasn't scored since April 2018 or something like that. So a very defensive approach there from the Saints. But why wouldn't you against Liverpool, who are firing on all cylinders at the moment? Let's go to the world of cricket. Mark Archer, tell me more, because no cricket today, is that right?
No cricket today, but plenty of cricket tomorrow, of course, Tom. It is the Asia Cup, and it's all taking place here in the UAE. Super Four is happening. Four teams are left. You've got India, Pakistan, Afghanistan and Bangladesh fighting it out. Eliminated early in the week were Sri Lanka and Hong Kong. Two games yesterday. We saw down in Abu Dhabi, Pakistan defeated Afghanistan by 3 wickets with 3 balls remaining. So great match there between those two teams. And in Dubai, India had a pretty comfortable victory against Bangladesh by 7 wickets. What that means tomorrow, Tom, is we're going to see round two of India versus Pakistan in Dubai. And Pakistan will be wanting to play a little bit better than they did earlier in the week. They, in some ways, almost humiliated, overawed by the occasion. India had a massive win. Their coach, the South African Mickey Arthur, had this to say about that match, the first match that Pakistan took India on. He doesn't want to repeat the same mistakes that they made in that first match.
We sort of batted outside our roles, which was very disappointing. Imam is not, it's not his role to be running down at Bhuvneshwar Kumar on the third over. It's not Safi's role to be hitting over the top and getting caught out there. You know, we've got guys, we've got X-Factor guys whose role it is to do that. If Fakhar gets out playing that way, well, then that's okay, because that's what he needs to do. If Asif gets out like that, that's okay, because that's his role. But the other four batsmen certainly need to take a responsibility. And I just thought we were soft. 158 dot balls out of 258 balls faced. Not good enough. India played better than us today. They put us under pressure for longer periods of time. I think they were probably quite good for their hit out last night. And a little bit of a scare they've got. And they certainly came back, and their disciplines were so much better. I think we saw what a difference Bumrah makes to their attack. I thought their spinners bowled better. Their lengths were far better than they were last night. So I think they were better for the hit out.
So that was the Pakistan coach Mickey Arthur discussing the first matchup between India and Pakistan, the first match in the UAE between those two teams in almost a decade. Also taking place tomorrow in Abu Dhabi is Afghanistan taking on Bangladesh. And Afghanistan have performed extremely well, as has Bangladesh. So that's going to be a tight contest. Later in the week, on the 25th, we see India taking on Afghanistan, and then Bangladesh will also see Pakistan. The final, it all comes to a conclusion next Friday in Dubai. Looks like India are doing what they have to do to get to the final. Can Pakistan get enough points up during the week to take on what will be a round three competition there? But plenty of interest, of course, when these two teams come together. It's a rare occasion when they do face each other. This is what the our good friends, the experts at ESPN Crick Info, had to say, because of this big match tomorrow, India-Pakistan. This is what they're saying over in Crick Info.
Round two of India and Pakistan is of far greater context on Sunday in Dubai. It's a Super 4 game. There is going to be significance for the winner, unlike the group stage game that these two teams played out, which was quite almost in an anti-climax, quite one-sided. Deep Das Gupta to look ahead to that game with me on ESPN Cricket Info Match Day. It's fair to say this may not be as one-sided as the first one.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. I thought the first game... I thought Pakistan wanted to prove a point or make a statement the way they came out to bat. But I think the game against Afghanistan and their win against Afghanistan, I think that must have settled down. Because this Pakistan side is different. The last 1 year, the kind of cricket that they've played, it's been very clinical. Mm. It's been very professional in their approach. Everyone does their own job and own role. And that wasn't seen in the first game. So I think that win against Afghanistan would have kind of got them back on track.
Very contrasting type of test for both teams in the first Super 4 game. Would you rather be Pakistan playing out their 100 overs, tense chase and coming out on top? Would there still be questions about India? They've had it too easy, perhaps. Maybe some questions still about 4-5.
Not really. I don't think so. Because again, India-Pakistan game, it's got to do more with your emotions. How do you control them and nerves and everything else? I mean, that was quite evident in the first game that, you know, Pakistan, like I mentioned, tried to prove a point there. But I think this is going to be, it seems like going to be much closer than the first one.
Changes, if any, for India?
I don't think so. I don't think there might be changes in the Pakistan side.
Yes.
Shadab would come back. I don't know about Amir, but Shadab. Well,
assuming he's fit, he would come back. Yeah, but would you play Shaheen Afridi ahead of Mohammad Amir? With all that's been said about Amir.
I think so. I think so, because it's not about how Amir has been bowling off late. It's just that if the conditions are not suitable for him to swing the ball, then you take the most potent part of his bowling out of the scene. And Shaheen looked pretty good and sharp the game against Afghanistan.
Backing India's favourites, though?
Yes, I would back India for that.
All right,
yeah.
Many thanks, Deep. That is the big one on Sunday in the Super Bowl. India versus Pakistan in Dubai.
Extraordinary crowds they've been having down there at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. I'm pretty much sure that will continue tomorrow, as it has done throughout. It's been a good tournament. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, big crowds also in Dubai, but also in Abu Dhabi. I think they had 38,000 people over the two games over the weekend as well. With obviously down there Pakistan and Afghanistan, massively popular, and then obviously Bangladesh as well. So yeah, it's been great to see so much top class cricket here. And speaking of top class cricket, you know who's winging their way here from down under? It's the Aussies are basically en route now to the UAE. They will start their first warm up match for the Test series and the international series against Pakistan next Saturday, Tom. So the final of the Asia Cup is next Friday in Dubai, and then at the ICC Academy ground on Saturday, Australia start a four-day match in preparation for that Test series. Let's have a quick listen. As they boarded the plane, here's the Aussie captain, Tim Payne, talking about the upcoming trip and the tour in the UAE to take on Pakistan.
I think it's going to be hard work over there, there's no doubt. I think games traditionally in the UAE take a long time, so we're going to have to be really patient. Again, we've spoken about partnerships and patience and pressure are going to be the real key over there. So games that drag along for 3-4 days and then can happen really quickly on day 5. So it's about having your team in a position to strike late in the game. I think it's come at a really good time for him. He's been in outstanding form, albeit in white ball cricket, but you know, he can only score runs in the games you're playing in. So I think he's matured into a really, really good cricketer. And as I said, I think guys come into their best in their early 30s. So Finchie couldn't have been picked at a better time, and I think he'll do really well.
It's going to be interesting, because this is their first series since the ball tampering scandal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. And it's interesting to read that Steve Smith and David Warner actually returned to club cricket today in Australia. Well, David Warner, got 150, and Steve Smith scored I think 80 something. So those two players are obviously being integrated slowly back into cricket, and that's in grade cricket in Sydney, which is of a particularly high standard. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that new look Australian team comes together. A few new faces in that touring party, Tom, and we all know how strong the Pakistan team are playing in these UAE conditions. They've been based here for almost a decade. They're very comfortable playing in this environment, and it's a huge challenge for the Aussies to get anything out of the series, I would have thought.
We'll keep an eye on that one for you. We haven't talked Laver Cup as yet, and I want to just make mention of that one, because explain it to me, please, Robbie Greenfield. What is it? It's like a Ryder Cup for tennis.
Yeah, it's an annual chance for Roger Federer to get together with some of his chums and win a tennis match, I think. It's like the Ryder Cup of tennis. That's exactly it. It's Europe versus rest of the world. It is same kind of format. So the two team captains, John McEnroe for the rest of the world team, and Bjorn Borg, another legend of tennis, captaining the European team. It's a brainchild of Roger Federer's. I think ultimately it's designed to usurp and perhaps overtake and supersede the Davis Cup, which has all sorts of scheduling issues at the moment and has attracted some negative headlines. And the Laver Cup, there's an air of simplicity about it. The Davis Cup kind of rambles on in this kind of no one really knows when the final is, and the Laver Cup is a self-contained event, and what happened last year was that it gave Roger Federer an opportunity to play doubles with Rafa Nadal. This year it's the turn of Novak Djokovic to team up with Roger Federer on the doubles court, and they played against Jack Sock and Kevin Anderson. They actually lost the match. It was the only point that the rest of the world team were able to garner on the opening day, because Europe are far better man for man. Europe have got Grigor Dimitrov, Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic, Kyle Edmund. You look at the rest of the world team, and they're led by Kevin Anderson and Nick Kyrgios. And there's a bit of a discrepancy between the abilities of the two teams. So Europe leading 3-1. Let's hear now from both Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic on the experience, albeit a losing one, of playing doubles with one another.
You learn a lot from these kind of matches, and it was a big time match for us, and we wanted to go down as a 1-0 team, maybe, if we never play again together. So this is disappointing, of course, and in a way we feel we let our team down.
We have to play again.
Yes, so absolutely. So from that standpoint, it's all good, but we had a good day as a team, so we're very happy there. Like Novak said, I really also enjoyed myself, and even though the result was not what we hoped for. Yeah, for me it was just, he's got a winner mentality, and there's no panic. Doesn't matter the score, if you're up and down. We were up and down today, and I see the same Novak. It's like, okay, let's take ourselves out of this hole. Let's go if you're in the lead, and there is just no sense of panic. It's just like, go through point for point mentality, and I think that's what champions do very well, and Novak's obviously one of them. Most people worry about the rivalry after this, because they think you're going to go on vacation together, Yeah. I think the rivalry will remain strong as well, I want to beat Novak next time I play him, and I think vice versa too. I mean, you want to beat the best, and that's why I think we're both still on tour.
It was great fun. It was really an amazing experience. Of course, the result is not what we hoped for, but I'll carry this forever, definitely in my career. I apologize right away because it didn't look that great, but I guess I got my karma back. Jack just checked me, you know, it just straight to the heart, you know. And no, it was a lot of fun, you know. I want to thank Roger in this way as well for playing with me. It was a great experience. I loved it. You know, I was looking forward to it. Obviously, I wanted to win as much as Roger did. But, you know, these guys came up with some big shots when it mattered, and it was a lot of fun.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
So Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder have agreed December the 1st is going to be the time that they climb into the ring together. Also saw a rather bizarre news conference yesterday. Certain Conor McGregor was up to his old antics, but he has confirmed that he's back in the ring, back in the octagon, I should say, on the 6th of October for UFC 229, when he'll take on his Russian undefeated opponent, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Who I hope smashes him through the octagon and wipes that detestable cockiness off his face,
say what
by
you
the
think.
Way.
Yeah, just say what you think.
Oh, my. Honestly, that guy has become a caricature. I know it's all to sell fights. I hope it is. Some of the stuff he's been saying, yeah, it's beyond the pale. If I was Khabib, I would be looking forward to giving him a good pummeling. But you've got to worry as well. Someone tweeted that Conor McGregor in that press conference looked like Scarface just before he gets shot in the back with a Tommy gun. In other words, having built up this massive empire of riches and just before his demise, you know, he was an incredible, put on a performance. I think he still thinks he's on the Mayweather press tour.
He was doing that, and he was trying to sell his new ventures, his new business ventures, yeah, as well. It's just all got a little bit out of hand. Anyway, thankfully, that's in a couple of weeks' time, UFC 229 on October the 6th. You've got a big one to look forward to on December the 1st. But you know what? You don't even have to wait that long for some big boxing stories to develop. In fact, later on tonight, in the early hours of tomorrow morning, we're going to be treated to another one.
My name is Anthony Oluwafemi Olaseni Joshua. I think no amount of pressure people expect from me can outweigh the amount of pressure I put on myself. It's about me and reaching my potential.
You believe you can go all the way, don't you?
I'm not saying anything just yet.
I'm gonna step right over you. I walk this earth like a god.
This is chapter 2 for me, and Vetkin is the first on my list.
Good work.
Alexander Povetkin finds the ammunition to end the argument.
This is the fight game. Let's rock and roll. Vetkin, let's go to war.
So AJ wants to go to war with Povetkin. They will do probably about 1 o'clock tomorrow morning, so a little later on tonight. We're all looking forward to this one. I'm just not convinced. I'm a little bit concerned about AJ's preparation for this one. Just seems to be focused a lot on fights further down the line rather than getting this one done and dusted first.
Yeah, and one of the things he was very careful to do when he had to fight Joseph Parker was to block out talk of a potential fight with Deontay Wilder. This time around, yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying. He seems to be a bit more distracted. He's talking a lot about the Wilder-Fury matchup, yeah, as well. You look at the two of them standing alongside one another. Povetkin, from a physical point of view, the stature. Povetkin's a lot shorter. He's not as muscular. He doesn't look as intimidating and as formidable as Anthony Joshua. And you'd expect, given their respective CVs, I mean, I'm looking at Povetkin in terms of his own CV and the fact that he beat David Price, the fact that he's already been beaten by Vladimir Klitschko, admittedly a long time ago when Klitschko was more in the prime of his career. But he's not really fought anyone of kind of superstar status, Povetkin, and yet Ring Magazine ranked him as the number 3 heavyweight. So we talk about a golden era. We mentioned that at the start of the show. When you dig a bit deeper and go beneath the surface a little bit, there is a paucity of really, really good heavyweights in the division. Povetkin is a very solid, unspectacular, but workmanlike fighter. He's dangerous. His record is impressive. It reads 35 fights, 34 wins, 24 of those by knockout, and just the one loss, as I mentioned, to Vladimir Klitschko. He's 6'2", he's got a 75-inch reach. And Joshua, we'll hear from him now, in fact, because he knows that as the bigger man, he's going to have to be quite nimble in the ring. Povetkin will be a busy fighter. The footwork will be the key. Povetkin will look to fight on the inside and try and stay out of Joshua's jab or stay away from that range. Let's hear now how Joshua plans to approach this fight with Alexander Povetkin.
We're nearly here now. Going to do some training after this. Just keep on ticking over. So I see it like a Monday. Train, shake off the cobwebs, and I'll go in for a good fight tomorrow night.
What do you make of the weights with Povetkin coming in almost 2 stone lighter than you?
He's going to be quick. He's going to be fast. That's why I've got to put on my dancing shoes and be sharp with my feet.
But you're happy to do that? You're ready to do that? You've got plans A, B, C, whatever is needed?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I always look at it this way. If they're strong to the head, you just take them out to the body. If they're strong to the body, you hit them to the head. Sooner or later, they fold. And I'm a physical, strong guy. I know how to box. So it'll be a good competitive fight.
But make no mistake about it, we all know that Alexander Povetkin is a dangerous fighter.
Yeah, definitely. YouTube shows you that. Google shows you that. History, stats, fights, everything shows you that. And if anyone doubts it, tune in Saturday and you'll see a good fight. Boxing ain't easy. If it was, as I said, I wish I could go back 15 fights and pick out one of the guys I've beaten before and fight him tonight in front of a sellout crowd. But realistically, the bigger the audience, the tougher the challenge. And Povetkin is on the other side of the ring, a man that I have to beat.
But your life has been all about tough challenges, hasn't it? This is just another one in many ways.
Yeah, that's why I'm chilled out. I don't really let it get to me. I'm proper relaxed. Because Rob said it to me, my trainer said it to me in this camp. He said, don't stress too much, because in about 30 years, you'll look back and say these were the best times of your life. So enjoy them for what they are now.
Just give us one last message for all these fight fans that are here today and everybody watching on TV at home. What can they expect to see at Wembley Stadium tomorrow night?
You always ask this question and I haven't figured out what to say yet. I'm not a salesman. Eddie can answer this better.
You should have an answer ready for me by now.
Fireworks.
Fireworks. Can we expect fireworks? We're going to be watching on with interest. The card itself will start at 10 o'clock, won't it?
Yeah, card starts local time, 10 o'clock. There'll be some fights on the undercard. And then, as we mentioned a little earlier, 10 to 1 in the morning, local time, Alexander Povetkin and Anthony Joshua will make their way to the ring. A lot of the experts are predicting Joshua to win via knockout and that it will not go the distance. His fight with Joseph Parker was the first in his professional career which did go the distance. But then, you know, he's relaxed. Is he too relaxed, I wonder? Yeah. Has he taken this fight seriously enough? Those questions will all be answered in around about 6 hours, 7 hours' time, Tom.
We will be watching on with interest for that. And, of course, you can catch up all the results and a little more insight into the fight itself tomorrow morning when I will be on the agenda from 10. And I will make sure that I get either Robbie or Chris or somebody else who watched the fight to give us their professional and expert
opinions. You may just get us both if it's a good one.
Who knows? So we'll definitely get that. Mark Archer, going to watch the fight, or is that not your bag, baby?
I'll probably watch the highlights in the morning, Tom, to be honest. But, no, just looking at the tail of the tape. I mean, Joshua, he's got 4 inches on this guy. He's got 2 stone. He's 11 years younger. Everything looks like it. He should win this relatively comfortably. And you expect him to keep that form up. You expect a knockout maybe towards the latter end of the fight in terms of that, but it's 80,000 people at Wembley. He's got to put on a show. He's got to put on a performance. A lot of expectations now.
He's never been knocked out.
A lot of expectations, I think, on Anthony Joshua's shoulders now as well. When you're filling up big stadiums like Wembley Stadium, you've got big pay-per-view audiences in there. Whether he gets caught between putting on a show and actually boxing him and fighting him will be interesting, but a lot of expectation on Joshua, but you expect him to win this relatively comfortably.
Looking forward to that one. That is to look forward to a little later on. Stay tuned, though, to Dubai Winner 3.8. Coming up in just a few moments' time, you will have uninterrupted coverage of Manchester United against Wolves. Straight after that, Brighton against Spurs. Robert Greenfield, thank you very much indeed to you.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers, Archie Arch.
Thank you, Thomas.
Hector, thank you very much indeed to you. Benji B, thank you very much. And Viva Las Vegas back in the studio as well for keeping us on air. That was The Grill. Stay tuned. You've got Premier League action coming your way now. We'll be back next week between the hours of 3 and 6. Till then,
there's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.